And now, live on 670 The Score and on the Odyssey app, it's Anthony Herron, former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye, football analyst for 670 The Score, Fox Sports, SiriusXM, Big Ten Network, and NBC Sports. Anthony Herron on 670 The Score.
I appreciate you tuning in here this Sunday evening edition, the post-post show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. 24-17 was the final score down in NOLA. Bears lose to the New Orleans Saints. Record drops to 2-7 on the season. And I think in the quite a few of your lifetimes, you haven't seen the Bears actually win a game at the Superdome. It's been a few decades since that has been the case. Tyson Bagent was, of course, the starting quarterback yet again today. And he was 18 out of 30 in the game, 220 yards, threw a couple of touchdown passes, had a strong start in the first half, and then three crucial, critical interceptions on the hole in the game. Also a fumble that was lost to the Saints as well. Their quarterback, Derek Carr, 25 out of 34, 211 yards, a couple of touchdown passes for Carr in a game that it kind of seemed like the Saints were making every effort possible, every effort plausible to keep the Bears in this ball game, where I'd say as the second half wore on, kind of the snap-by-snap evaluation of it started to go more advantage New Orleans. The Bears, I thought, controlled a reasonable amount of the action in the first half. But then, you know, there were decisions in the midst of the game. Like, you know, there's a fourth down in the first half, I believe it took place in the second quarter, where Bears had a fourth and two coming up. And Dennis Allen, one of the old assistant coaches from my time with the Atlanta Falcons, I've known DA for quite a while here, until he worked his way up the coaching ranks, became a defensive coordinator and multi-time head coach at this point. He decided it would not be prudent for the Bears to have fourth and two from the red zone. So he knocked them back to third and 12, and Tyson Bagent used his legs to just narrowly pick up a first down that led to a touchdown for the Bears. And of course, other decisions in the second half. Like, and again, I'm a little bit old school. I'm a little bit more conservative with some of these things, but got into plus territory in the second half, decided to punt it away. You know, the opportunity to make it a two-score game in the fourth quarter, opted to go for a fourth and one that the Bears stymied and got the football back. So there was a lot that the Saints did to sort of keep the Bears in the game, but there was so much that the Bears did that was self-inflicted as well. Another game where penalties were a huge issue for the Bears, and that showed up yet again to be something in a one-score game. The turnover margin, which of course is a big part of the hallmark of what Matt Eberflus tries to sort of build his program around, what he wants this football team to be about, is protecting the football, taking the football away. And this, another game where the Bears come out on the minus side of the turnover margin, 5 turnovers in the game for the Bears, 0 takeaways in the game for the Bears. And you know, to say that it's difficult to win when that's the margin would certainly be the understatement of the season here. And we've seen that as a familiar refrain, where the Bears are the more penalized team and the Bears are the squad who does not protect the football as well as they are able to take it away. And so the Saints come out with a one-score win, 24-17. Overall, the third down efficiency, Bears were 6 out of 12 on third down. Saints were 7 out of 14. And the total amount of plays run was fairly even, 64-62, with the Bears having a slight edge there. And, of course, a number of position groups that I think many of us had a close watch on in the game. Tyson Bagent, his performance, I'll be able to get into that with you throughout the evening here. And certainly the defensive line, the defensive front, after adding Montez Sweat into the mix and what that looked like throughout the game. We'll talk about all that with you here as I take you up to Sunday Night Football coverage here on 670 The Score. Cincinnati Bengals will be hosting the Buffalo Bills. A couple of 3-loss teams. Bengals have really turned their season around as of late, as Joe Burrow has started to look more and more healthy getting into the flow of the season here. The Bengals will be at home, Buffalo on the road, and we'll get that coverage started here in just over an hour. We'll get your phone calls in as well at 312-644-6767. 312-644-6767. I see the phone lines lit up already. I see Dennis, I see Brandon, I see Jim, and others on hold right now. So I will certainly get to some of you here before I take my first time out. But just some of my overall thoughts on what I witnessed in the game today. Really like the way that the Bears came out offensively. I know from an analytical perspective to take the football first, as has become a bit of the habit for Matt Eberflus, it's not something you see much of the league doing, certainly not consistently at this point, but it's become the consistent way that Eberflus has operated here. And I'd say more often than not, it's worked out all right. And when you think about it, the Bears' offense has been, in a lot of games, has been at its best early. They've been at their best on offense in, you know, the scripted portion of things. And so to be able to start fast and be the team that takes the football first and puts some points on the board, I kind of get that. Even though analytically you'd like to be the team who gets the opportunity to double up, maybe get a 2-for-1 where you finish the first half with the ball and then you get the ball first in the second half because you went ahead and kicked it away to the opponent. That's normally what that thought process would be. It seems to me that Eberflus making that decision to, when he has the opportunity, to take the football first. I think part of that is just feeling like, you know what, our offense has actually operated pretty well, whether we have started the game with the football or just whenever our first series comes up, is when more often than not the Bears' offense has been at its best, and then things can taper off a bit as the game wears on. So he's at least taken that opportunity to say, well, you know, if we get the ball first, let's put that offense on the field. He did it with Justin Fields in some of Justin's final few starts before his injury, and he's done it with Tyson Bagent in his starts here as well. And so you at least give the Bears, give your team, as Matt Eberflus sees it, I would imagine his thought is, we get the opportunity to take the lead in a game, which has not been the Bears' strong suit to get leads in ball games, but they've been better early on offense than they have late. So let's get the offense rolling. We're good within the script. Maybe we have a lead when the defense takes the field. And then now you also have the opportunity, the possibility for your defense to take the field with a little more confidence, with a little more urgency that they're playing with, because they're actually taking the field with a lead. It's not something the Bears' defense has had the opportunity to do that frequently. So I don't mind the idea of just going ahead and taking the football first to mix things up a little bit and just see, you know, if you build confidence early in the game because your offense can give you a lead early on. The game plan, the game calling for the Bears offense, I liked a lot of what they ended up showing in the first half. Now, you know, it's aggressive, opening up and empty as they did, and the Bears utilized with a rookie quarterback making his third career start, second one on the road in a really hostile environment. But they're showing trust in Tyson Bagent to go empty as frequently as the Bears have gone empty with Bagent. And from that perspective of him being in the gun, seeing things quickly and getting the football out of his hands, for a guy at this stage in his development, I think Tyson Bagent has handled that pretty well. On the whole, it's a game I feel like the Bears offensive line performed at a high level against that veteran Saints front seven. I'll get into some more detail on that here, but when they were in empty, for the most part, it wasn't a game where Tyson Bagent got punished very much. It was a game that the Bears ran the football effectively, protected the quarterback effectively, and you saw Tyson Bagent, especially early, definitively in the first half, getting the ball out of his hands decisively and accurately. I liked the way that the pocket moved quite a bit early in that game, in the first half of that game. And the second half, in my opinion, was a different story. And Luke Getsy did become more pocket-based in his approach offensively. And the volume of passes, I thought, upticked more and more in a game that never at any point got away from the Bears, but it did seem like perhaps the Bears got away from the run game a bit more than what was necessary here. And then once that became the case, the Saints secondary really capitalized on that against a young quarterback, throwing into tighter windows as they began to mix and match coverages in the second half. And I thought the Saints showed the Bears some man coverage looks in half number one, but I'd say there was a blend throughout the game, and you were able to do that against a secondary like New Orleans when you have that level of experience throughout the Saints defense. It's an older defense that can bait young quarterbacks, and we saw them baiting Tyson Bagent throughout this game. The opposing quarterback completion percentage, opposing quarterback passer rating, they've been amongst the best in football throughout the season without having some sort of a dominant blitz package. And so, you know, Bears fans who talk constantly about, hey, why don't we blitz more? It is possible to play defense in the NFL and do so at a high level without having some overwhelming blitz package. You do need to be able to rush the quarterback. The Saints, frankly, are not some overwhelming individual pass rush team either. Now, when the game action dictates it, and we saw today where the Bears' pass protection held up really well throughout most of the game, But then when they were trailing, and it was only trailing by a score, but in the fourth quarter, as you could feel the tenor of the game starting to shift, and there were some opportunities that Dennis Allen took advantage of to punt and pin the Bears, and field position dictated that the Saints defense was able to play downhill at the Bears more often, especially in the fourth quarter of the game, then that's where there were more penalties for the Bears in the last quarter and a half, and the Bears' pass protection began to struggle more over the last quarter and a half. And sure, that's where you certainly want a team to be at their best, and you know, you would hope that they would look exactly the same as they did through two and a half quarters or through three full quarters. That wasn't the case, and the game action ended up dictating that there was more urgency from the Saints defense, and I thought that showed up in the fourth quarter where that veteran pass rush began to heat things up, and you had a veteran secondary start to show more looks to a young quarterback as they switch things up and match things in different ways, and then as decisive and as rhythmic, as quick a release as Tyson Bagent has become known for in a very brief Bears career, we saw a guy that started to pat the football a little bit more in the fourth quarter of the game today. And then once that happened, the pass rush started to get home. And it wasn't like the Saints defensive line was just winning clean off the snap. But yeah, maybe you stymie the guy from that initial block from the Bears pass protection. But as Bagent pats the ball, holds it a little bit, he's not taking off running and hurting the defense with his legs as much in the second half of that game like he did in half number one. And so all those things began to coalesce. We saw Saints defense take advantage of a young quarterback. And as Tyson Bagent held the ball, tried to deliver it, was a bit late on those last couple of interceptions and certainly behind receivers on those last couple of interceptions. And that's the thing where, you know, the physical attributes of Tyson Bagent, it's fair for those to be a part of his evaluation. But by comparison to some of his, I guess I'll call them contemporaries, not an experience, but you know, a guy like Gardner Minshew, who's bounced around to a couple of different teams at this point, but has had moments and had flashes and Minshew mania, just like when I was calling his games and he was a quarterback at Washington State, who was a journeyman college quarterback and had an opportunity to transfer to Alabama and be potentially a backup there, decided not to do that and went to Washington State instead and had a record-setting senior season at Washington State. And then through his NFL career so far, when he's been in the lineup, he's been kind of a fan favorite type of guy because his storyline is one that we can all get behind. That's endearing in a lot of ways. It's kind of this, you know, this guy's sort of swimming against the grain, swimming upstream because there are some physical limitations there. But physically, there's not anything that Gardner Minshew is capable of on the football field that Tyson Bagent isn't capable of either. I'd say, you know, as far as arm strength and mobility, there's some similarities between the two guys. So in the end, it's not like Tyson Bagent not having Matthew Stafford's arm or, frankly, not having Justin Fields' arm. That's not the main thing that would limit his ability to succeed in the NFL. But there is a ceiling to what he should be able to be expected to do. And so, you know, for anyone who feels demoralized or dejected by the performance of Tyson Bagent, yeah, I think your perspective is probably lacking for what you would expect, one, from a guy who is a rookie making his third career start and doing so in one of the more hostile environments in the National Football League, but then also a guy who does have some of those physical limitations. But again, I wouldn't say that the minimal arm strength of Tyson Bagent, the average arm strength of Tyson Bagent, that's not the only thing that would limit his ability to succeed at the NFL level. But because it places a bit of a ceiling on the Bears' passing attack and what it can be, everything around Tyson Bagent has to operate at such a high level. He's got to be ahead of the opposing defense mentally. And that's difficult to sustain even for veteran QBs. I was telling you the numbers that the Saints defense is able to do and that they've been in making life difficult on virtually every passing attack they face this season. That's veteran and rookie alike. And so for Tyson Bagent, if he's late on a throw, he doesn't have the arm strength to really drive it into that tight window late in the way that some other quarterbacks, if they're confused or a bit indecisive or late on a throw, but then they can kind of get away with that because they're going to drive it in there late. He doesn't necessarily have that luxury to do that in the same way that some other quarterbacks do. That's the type of thing where arm strength ends up mattering. We'll see, you know, if he's playing this coming Thursday night. I haven't checked the weather report for what's expected here in Chicago come Thursday night. But if he starts again at Soldier Field on Thursday and you have blustery or windy or chilly conditions, then that's going to be something else that really tests the arm strength of Tyson Bagent for how the weather conditions. You know, it was one thing to be in a dome today and to be late against that playmaking secondary, and that showed up. But then if it's Soldier Field, even if he's early, but it is more difficult conditions to throw the football in, that's where that matters. But that's where, as he goes back, and he was talking about it post-game, needing to go back, study the film, study his mechanics, study his decision-making, because if he's ahead of the opposing defense, then that's where you can throw it early into that same window that Darnell Mooney ended up presenting himself to Tyson Bagent in. If he's throwing that football early into that window before Mooney has made his break, before defenders have had their opportunity to drive on that route, then that's a different story. That's a different deal. But that's where Tyson Bagent has to be elite mentally. And frankly, he has to be elite emotionally, because you could tell as the game wore on and it got into the latter stages of the third quarter and certainly into the fourth quarter, and you have the opposing offense now seems like they're building momentum and driving the football and putting points on the board, and your pass protection starting to struggle a bit more, and their crowd at times where you're backed up, the volume in the Superdome really becoming more and more of a factor. All those things require him to be. And again, I do think his poise continues to show up in these moments, but it's a different deal. When the game is nearing cold, crushed depth, and you can tell that the opponent now seemingly has the upper hand on you, he's got to be that much more sharp, that much more crisp, that much more poised, and that's a lot to ask for a rookie quarterback. And so that's where those things show up. Maybe that same guy who was running around in the first half of the game, moving the chains with his legs and flashing the first down symbol, there were some opportunities for him in the second half where the game is still tight, where it's still a one-score game that he's in the midst of, where, as opposed to patting the ball in the pocket, maybe it would have served him better to tuck it and run and just move the chains in that way, as opposed to trying to fit it late into tight windows as coverages are being matched. And, you know, we saw the Saints do that at a higher level in third and certainly in the fourth quarter of the game, in confusing a young quarterback, and pass protection that held up at a higher level through the first two and a half or three quarters began to struggle a bit more in that game as well. And so, you know, it's not a Tyson versus Justin scenario here with how this should be viewed, how it made sense to view this. I view Tyson Bagent exactly the same way as I sit here right now as I did in those few series he got against the Minnesota Vikings. I think he's a guy who, yes, has some physical limitations, but has enough physical attributes to succeed at the NFL level. But there certainly is a ceiling to what that success can look like, unless everything is crisp and precise around him. And like we saw in that game against the Raiders, where the offensive line is just dominated by the Chicago Bears on each line of scrimmage. And you got guys, all that run after catch in the first half. Think about that play where he threw to Darnell Mooney, threw it a little bit behind Mooney, and then he takes it and turns upfield and runs for another 40 yards. Like, when that's the case for Tyson Bagent, you can operate in that way. You can win that way in the National Football League, but it does ask for a lot. You're going to have double-digit play drives where you can't pick up penalties to sit yourself behind the chains. You can't have drops where you are now going to be at second and 10 as opposed to second and 2. Everything around you has to operate at a really high level if you don't have a quarterback who's out there sort of multiplying and putting that pressure on the defense either with his arm and or his legs and doing that at a high level consistently. And that's where, you know, some of the frailties of the rest of the team in their execution end up showing up at a much, much higher level. 312-644-6767. Like I mentioned, I'm definitely going to talk some things about the Bears defense, some positives and negatives as well. But let me get a couple of callers in here before I take my first time out. We've had Dennis, who's been very patient, wanted to give his thoughts on where things sit right now. Dennis is out in Minneapolis. Dennis, what's happening? You're on the Post Show.
Appreciate it, Mr. Aaron. Just giving a call. You touched on it a little bit with some of the play calling and some of the stuff that's done. I think the reason for the call is I just believe that Getsy has a hard time sticking to script when he's doing things, when things are going well for the offense. The abandoning the run. And this goes with Bagent and Fields, but keeping these guys in the pocket all the time it just is seemingly a repetitive thing over this past year and a half. And I just think the Bears, I think even Fuchs just made a bad call, but bringing him in, of course there's some things that have worked well, but I just don't think he goes about sticking to things that are working, and it just ends up hurting the offense in the end. You know, just this game here, just after the first two interceptions, why do you keep allowing, not that Beatty shouldn't have been throwing the ball some, but why do you keep having him sit in the pocket and try to find receivers and sticking in tight spots instead of, you know, running Roshan and running Foreman when that's actually working? It seemingly to me just he ends up getting out of script, and I don't know if he's just so overconfident in himself, thinking that some of these pass plays that he draws up are going to win, but it's seemingly over his career, it hasn't worked. And we're seemingly in the same position where quarterbacks can't find open receivers, because it's looking like we're seeing the same things all over again. And there's no creative design within some of his plays. And defenses know how we line up, what routes are going to be run, and they're just covered. I just wanted to hear your opinions on that.
I really appreciate it, Dennis. I think it's a good call. It's one of those things I've been talking about a lot between last season and even this season. It was one thing last year where Luke Getsy began to, after they came out of the mini bye and Justin begins running around all over the place. And I think there is certainly still a place for QB run within the Bears offense. I was even referencing it earlier this season while I'm on every Monday with Bernstein and Holmes. And after that first game where I told Lawrence and Dan that I felt like Matt Eberflus needed to have a hard conversation with Luke Getsy and be very specific, very definitive with trying to figure out, what did you see last season that worked well for our offense? What do you believe will work well for our offense this season? And if that was it in game one, then we need to figure some other stuff out. But I think there was tangible evidence last year for calling Justin Fields into movement and how that impacted things. But calling a quarterback into movement, the QB run game is not the only way to do that. And we've seen examples of that. Today was a great example of that with Tyson Bagent. Now, what I liked about it in the first half of the game, we saw a good amount of zone read with Tyson Bagent, and he was able to, you know, and on those zone reads and some of those keepers off the zone read, he was able to attack the Saints defense in doing that and moving the chains with his legs and keep their defense off balance. It wasn't putting touchdowns on the board like it might have the potential to do with Justin Fields on some of those keepers and zone reads, but it's still impactful. It still takes the starch out of the opposing pass rush when you have a quarterback that can be impactful with his legs. And, you know, I was telling Dan and Lawrence this last week, like he's Tyson Bagent isn't some statue in the pocket. He's mobile enough to be a threat as a part of the ground attack, but you don't need to call a bunch of QB run with him. But what Luke Getsy also did, much more so in the first half of the game, to Dennis's point, than in the second half, was the pocket moved. There were a bunch of times where misdirection was utilized and sprint action and boot action was utilized. Just look at the very first touchdown pass to Cole Kmet on the tight end throwback, where he initially, Cole Kmet shows himself as a blocker to the play side. Tyson Bagent runs bootleg, you know, fakes the run play, fakes the stretch play to the front side, and then boots out quickly to the back. And as soon as he whips his shoulders around, he gets his eyes to the throwback to Kmet. And Cole Kmet is matched up one-on-one. Like, the Saints actually covered it well. Tyrann Mathieu knew exactly what was coming. But then, to Tyson Bagent's credit, he gave his mammoth tight end an opportunity to go up and moss a smaller defensive back, even one of the better defensive backs in football throughout the scope of his career, and Tyrann Mathieu, formerly a.k.a. the Honey Badger. But Cole Kmet did what I've really been hoping for Cole Kmet to do more frequently in his career, because he's not a guy who separates well from coverage. He's not one of these guys who's very slippery in and out of his breaks and sudden in and out of his routes. And so he doesn't separate from defensive backs that much. The Bears really tend to need to scheme Cole Kmet into big play opportunities. Now, once he gets the football, because of his size and his straight line speed, he is difficult to tackle. But that was actually an opportunity in the end zone where Cole Kmet went up in a 50-50 scenario and just made a contested grab. That's a great thing for the Bears offense to see that. And then when you see that from Cole Kmet early in the game, you saw other opportunities where Cole Kmet was plucking the ball with his hands. He's very inconsistent with that, but I loved seeing that, not only on that individual play from Cole Kmet, but throughout the game, him reaching out and snatching the football with his hands because seemingly his confidence in his hands has waned, has ebbed and flowed a bit at various points in his career. I thought that first touchdown pass was a great example of some of that misdirection that Luke Getsy utilizes at times. And I wish more of that would have been called, would have been seen, would have been used in the second half of the ball game, as opposed to the pocket becoming more stationary. And that's something that Luke Getsy has been guilty of time and time again. Let's sneak another caller in here at 312-644-6767 before I take my first time out. Let's see Brandon out there in Keysburg. Brandon, what's happening, man? You're on the Post-Post Show.
Hey, what's up, Big Ann? How you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man.
All right, man. First, want to comment on the elephant in the room, which is this Bayless Jones Jr. This guy cannot hold on to the ball no matter what, man. He's caused more turnovers than both quarterbacks. And when are we going to flush the toilet on this guy, number one? And the Bajent and Fields, man, I tell you what, this Bajent kid, he is this lightning, man. He's lightning on the field, and it's his third game on the field. And it's taken 3 years for Fields to, you know, to get this good. And this Bajent's right up there, man. A couple more games, he's going to be right up there on the top spot. So I think let's give this kid a chance.
All right, appreciate the call, Brandon. 312-644-6767. I like Tyson Bajent. I do. I like him a lot. And I've been pretty consistent with that thought process there. I'll to address your Bayless Jones point initially, you know, because I, on the whole, I'm far more patient with personnel transactions and patient with the potential development arc. I'm confident I'm more patient than most of you out there listening right now. But even, you know, with certain teams and individuals and from a personnel perspective, and Bayless Jones was the very first offensive draft pick of the Ryan Poles era. But I would say even the energy from Matt Eberflus after the game indicated to me, and we heard this at one point last season after there were multiple muffed punts from Bayless Jones in game, where, you know, Matt Eberflus wasn't necessarily giving much deference to Bayless Jones with the way he addressed things at a certain point last year. And I felt like today, when asked about Bayless Jones post-game, where I don't remember who exactly it was, who sort of almost gave Eberflus an out in the way that they phrased the question. It might have been Jason Leisure who perhaps was asking it, but there was, you know, number of media members there. And one of the Bayless Jones question afterwards was basically the way the question was framed was kind of like, hey, you know, is that a tough spot for Bayless to be in? Or is there a coaching point on some of those things on the face mask penalty that he had there? It seemed like it might've been kind of close. And Eberflus was like, nah, we're veterans. We're in the National Football League. We're NFL players. They got it right. He grabbed the face mask and we can't do that. And he was very definitive in that. And that to me indicated to me that perhaps the, I suppose I'll use the word patience. At least the perception internally of Bayless Jones may be adjusting a bit. My guy Alex Coon here, he's got that cut of Eberflus specifically addressing Bayless Jones.
Did you get next punished on the Bayless flag?
Yeah, it was the face mask. He grabbed it. It was face mask.
Yeah, it was Patrick Finley. That's who I know that voice anywhere. Finley was the one who asked that question of Eberflus specifically about Bayless Jones, and that to me was a more terse type of response from Flus about Bayless Jones. You know, he didn't say anything awful about him, but it was just very, very definitive. Like, no, we got to be better than that, essentially, is what that sounded like to me, and that sounds like a coach who is at a point, and I would imagine an organization that is getting to a point where the physical attributes of Bayless Jones are obvious when he receives and maintains control of the football. The issue is him receiving and maintaining control of the football. And, you know, the tunnel screen that happened before that, there was a very near fumble. But, you know, fortunately for Bayless Jones, the defender was able to knock it away before he actually had made a full possession of the football. So it didn't end up being ruled a fumble that the Saints recovered. It just ended up being ruled a drop by Bayless Jones. So I would agree with that point. I'll take a timeout and I'll come back and I'll address the other point about Tyson Bajent that the caller had a moment ago. And I'm certainly curious to hear your thoughts out there about it as well. And I see the other callers are on hold here at 312-644-6767. I'm taking you up to a football Monday. You can tune in all day Monday for reaction to Bears versus Saints. Gabe Ramirez will be live overnight from 12 to 5 a.m., followed by Mully and Hall, Bernstein and Holmes, and Parkins and Spiegel throughout your workday. So hang out with us. on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Busey Bank and It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. All of it, it can be heard on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. I want to respond to something, though, that caller, the last caller, I agree with the Velus Jones point. I would add some context to the Tyson Bagent point. And I'm curious for your thoughts here because I know a lot of you were so excited about Tyson Bagent after that start he made against the Raiders. And, you know, things have certainly come back down to earth a bit. But curious for what you think about the young Bears rookie backup QB who's made three starts. And in my opinion, I think we'll have every opportunity to make another start on Thursday Night Football coming up here on a short week. 312-644-6767. I'm Anthony Heron, taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Heron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You know, really the story of the day, right, is just the takeaways. You know, it's hard to win. You know, the league's pretty even, you know, in most spots, and it's hard to win when you have minus five. And again, that's a whole team thing, right? It's us protecting it, us protecting the quarterback, us getting on defense, and us doing a better job there, taking the ball away on D. So again, that's really where the story was. Again, I love the fight of the guys at the end there. Defense gave us a chance at the very end with those stops that we had and with the missed field goal that they had.
I agree, Flus. Bears coach Matt Eberflus talking about how awful it is to turn the football over five times in a game. Yes, I agree, Flus. It's bad. Makes it really difficult to win a football game, especially when you get no takeaways for your squad either. So that was a rough go of it that the Bears had in the turnover margin. I wonder what the all-time record is for a team who's had five turnovers and zero takeaways in a game. It's got to be over. But I don't know. Somebody out there, go ahead and hit it up on the text line at 312-644-6767. Or maybe if you're a research maven and you want to call in, you can do that. I'm Anthony Heron. This is Post Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. So the last caller, I addressed the Velus Jones aspect of his call. I wanted to save a moment for Tyson Bagent, though, because you don't need to do this to yourself. You don't really need to do it to Tyson Bagent either. You know, I think Tyson Bagent probably likes and enjoys, appreciates those who believe in him, and that's a great spot to be in. But you know, we've seen this before, where I've used the Jay Cutler example, where towards the end of Jay Cutler's career, whether it was Brian Hoyer or Jimmy Clausen or Matt Barkley, whereas Jay started to get banged up in his final seasons with the Bears, and we'd see the backup come in. And y'all were just tired of looking at Jay Cutler as the quarterback for the Bears. So anybody who came in and got some first downs going or completed some passes and just kind of looked differently and moved differently than Jay, it's like, all right, this is the guy. Jay is awful. I don't know what the Bears ever signed that guy for. This is the future. Brian Hoyer is the future. Matt Barkley is trending on Twitter because this is the future of the Bears.
Josh McCown
at quarterback. Yes, Alex Cohn. Josh McCown, future of the Bears at quarterback, because y'all were just tired of looking at Jay Cutler. You don't have to do this to Tyson Bagent. You don't have to do this to yourself. I'm a Tyson Bagent guy. I like Tyson Bagent. Tyson Bagent is ahead of the curve. For anybody who's an undrafted rookie quarterback starting in the National Football League and able to operate at the level that he's operating at is extremely impressive. But it is also worthwhile to view this in context without presuming that he is the future of the Bears, or just because you're tired of looking at Justin Fields halfway through his third season, that you presume or use terms like electric when you're describing Tyson Bagent and his lateral passing attack. Electric is not an adjective I would use to describe Tyson Bagent, but I'm not gonna tell you can't do it, but you don't have to, is my point. 312-644-6767. So you know what? I'm gonna stay on clock. I see Jim out there. I see Colin out there. I see Jesse out there. And we'll get a bunch of other callers in. When I come back at the top of the 6 o'clock hour, we're taking you all the way up to Sunday Night Football. So this is the final commercial break that I have. We'll make sure we get our calls in at 312-644-6767. I'm saying this for you. I'm helping you out there is my goal here. Because I am also excited by what the Bears have in Tyson Bagent as the potential, like, future game manager, backup quarterback guy. Those guys are important Tyson Bagent has shown that he can be an important part of the Bears' future. And maybe, I'm not going to put a ceiling on him, maybe he can go beyond that as well. Electric is not a word I would use to describe Tyson Bagent. Tune in all day Monday for reaction to Bears vs. Saints. Gabe Ramirez will be live overnight from 12 to 5 a.m., followed by Mullion Hall, Bernstein and Holmes, and Parkin Spiegel throughout your workday. So hang on. Hang out with us on the Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Busey Bank at itsnotagameillinois.com. All of it can be heard on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. That is your Football Monday here on The Score. This is going to be my last time out. That will take you all the way up to Sunday Night Football coverage between the Bengals and the Bills right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I think it was all on me, just, you know, forcing a couple plays there. And then, you know, you can't afford to take plays off in NFL because they come back to bite you. So got to be sharp on every play.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I like Tyson Bagent. I do. Like him a lot. But I'm keeping him in context. I'm just advising the rest of you to do so as well. 312-644-6767. It's a post-post show on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, I'm Anthony Herron, taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage here. Got my guy Alex Kuhn on the ones and twos with me as we get you set for Cincinnati and Buffalo. That game will be heard right here on The Score. But up until that point, we got the phone lines hot at 312-644-6767. Let me start off with some calls. I can react to some of the calls and then get in back into some of my other opinions as well. I haven't talked about Montez Sweat and the Bears defense very much. I don't want to make sure I get some of that in as well, but we've had some folks on the lines being very, very patient, some in the city, some in the state, some out of state as well. Let's go to Jim, who is in North Carolina. Go on, raise up, Jim. What's happening?
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Hey, I've been a transplant from the Midwest. I've been a Bears fan since 64. And I've watched a bunch of the college games with the North Carolina quarterback and the USC quarterback, and I don't see either one of them as being an improvement over Justin Fields. I'd much rather see us get three or four first-rounders by trading down and building a team around him.
Three or four first-rounders. See, that would be an interesting haul. I think I'm not – yeah, I don't study these, and thank you very much for the call, Jim. Appreciate you listening from North Carolina. I'm not certain what the haul would be for Justin Fields at this point. You know, the Bears right now, they know they would have his rights for at least one more season. He's, you know, just over halfway through his third year right now with the ball club. They will have him at least have his rights for at least through the fourth season. There will be a decision to make this offseason whether or not they would pick up the fifth-year option on Justin Fields as well. If that happens, then whomever they would trade him to potentially, whether or not they would like to have one more season of his rights or two more seasons of contract control, I would imagine those things factor into it as well. But, you know, three first-round picks and this sort of stuff, you know, I don't know whether or not Justin Fields would bring that sort of a haul. But I do know that, you know, coming into the Minnesota game, we saw back-to-back games of Luke Getsy, and frankly, in an offensive scheme that was very similar to what we saw today. What we've seen, I think, in multiple games with Tyson Bagent at quarterback, the Raiders game is one that stands out as well, where misdirection and pocket movement were constant. And I really feel like the Bears offense got away from that in the second half of the game today. And you know, you don't have to have a quarterback who's as mobile as Justin Fields to be able to call the QB into movement, and that was certainly on display in the first half of the game today. They ran zone read a bunch with Tyson Bagent. He was able to move the chains. He was able to keep that veteran Saints defense off balance, and they were able to utilize misdirection and pocket movement with a quarterback who's able to be mobile enough to showcase that and do so effectively. And it led to first downs and touchdowns. I talked through in detail that opening touchdown pass that Bagent on the tight end throwback that he threw to Cole Kmet as Cole Kmet ran across the field there and was able to win a contested ball, a jump ball against Tyrann Mathieu. Loved the play design there. And it worked out really well for the Bears in the red zone. Got away from it in the second half. But to me, that offensive game plan, very similar to what I feel like Luke Getsy did against Denver, against Washington, some QB run, some sprint, some boot, some misdirection with playmakers, you know, guys on jet sweeps and faking jet sweeps and bodies all over the place and having a quarterback on the move. and seeing the way that Tyson Bagent was able to exploit that with his level of mobility, just picture what that game plan could have looked like with Justin Fields constantly being called into that level of movement that we saw in the first half of the Bears game tonight or earlier today, and versus what it looked like with Tyson Bagent. And again, like I agree with the caller who's talking now. I don't agree with the word electric. I wouldn't use that to describe Tyson Bagent and what we've seen from him, but I do agree that I'm willing to grade Tyson Bagent on a curve because he's a rookie quarterback, three starts into his NFL career. Where the Bears are at right now, though, when you look at this franchise as a whole and where it needs to be understood that Justin Fields will go back in. Now, if Tyson Bagent would have just been out here lighting it up game after game and the Bears were winning and things were rolling with him, then I don't think they feel committed enough to Justin Fields at this point where we would presume I'm not confident they wouldn't have pulled Tyson Bagent if he was lighting it up and the team as a whole was doing great with him at quarterback. That's not the case. I think he has been impressive for an undrafted rookie, three starts into his NFL career. I'm willing to say I've been impressed by Tyson Bagent. Team as a whole continues to lose games, and he's turned the ball over a lot. My main concern after seeing those few series that Tyson Bagent got against the Minnesota Vikings was a willingness to be what I would term as careless with the football. And I don't necessarily even think that I wouldn't define the interceptions and the strip sack that we saw today as careless, but we do see a Tyson Bagent that has had a lot of turnovers in his limited action so far. Justin Fields had a bunch of turnovers too. Difference is, Justin Fields was a first-round pick. Justin Fields is a commodity that they have a big decision to make on over the offseason here. And also, Justin Fields has, for understandable reasons, shown a much exponentially higher ceiling than Tyson Bagent has shown up to this point. And the Bears are still in an evaluation phase, not only with the quarterback, but with this roster as a whole. And so when Justin Fields is healthy, whether that's this coming Thursday, which I would still be surprised if that's the case, even though he's out there throwing soft toss, you know, on Friday, and it's nice, the media's out there, they can see that, they can look at it. Dude dislocated his thumb on his throwing hand, popped it back into place, and it's nice to see that his thumb is becoming functional. I will be very surprised if Justin Fields is able to start or even play this coming Thursday night against the Carolina Panthers. Following game, though, further removed from that, I think that's going to make sense. I believe there's, of course, a much better chance he'll be physically capable of it, and I believe it will make more sense for both Justin Fields and the Bears. At that point, you'll be 10 games into the season after you get through Thursday Night Football, which means you will have 7 games remaining. It'll be a vital 7 games for Justin Fields. At that point, hopefully he'll be as healthy as he can be by then, but you'll have a 7-game stretch that remains in the regular season for him to perform potentially at the highest level he's capable of. What I think will be vital, will be important, is for the same style of offense that we saw in the first half today, same style of offense that we saw against Denver and Washington that completely went away against Minnesota. And as great as our media is, I really wish I even said this in transition, coming out of that Vikings game I filled in with on Monday, so you're doing transition with the afternoon show. I was hoping someone in the media, when the opportunity came to specifically address Luke Getsy about the game plan against Minnesota, and Kevin Fishbane, Fishy Business himself, wrote an article in The Athletic about the game plan and the way the pocket moved and how much time was spent for Justin Fields being called into movement against both Denver and Washington, and how that completely went away against Minnesota. And it's the same. It feels repetitive because it's the same thing, the same refrain that I've been repeating for 2 years with Luke Getsy as the offensive play caller here, with Justin Fields as his quarterback and just the personnel on the whole. We saw what that looked like against Denver and Washington, and then it became very pocket based against Minnesota. Justin Fields didn't handle that well. And Tyson Bagent, even though he is, at this point in his development, he gets the ball out more quickly, more rhythmically than Justin Fields does. He's more decisive than Justin Fields is, with a much lower ceiling in doing that. He's got a quicker release. He's more decisive when he does it. And that's great, because that's who he has to be to have a chance at success as a quarterback. And he knows who he is. I think that's a great thing for Tyson Bagent. The Bears offense, though, for it to put a bunch of touchdowns on the board, like we've seen them put a bunch of touchdowns on the board when Justin Fields has been in at QB. And that, to me, is where Matt Eberflus, with, I would say his time as Bears coach is on the line right now. As much as that last seven games is going to mean for Justin Fields, what remains of this season will go a long way in determining whether or not Matt Eberflus gets an opportunity to continue as Bears head coach. I don't know what discussions have been had with Luke Getsy about the offensive game plan up to this point. I'm confident they meet about it on a consistent basis, but whether it is Bajent and comparing the first half of today's offense versus the second half, or if it's when Justin Fields is in there and comparing the games where Justin Fields has looked most comfortable and been at his best versus the games where he has not, it is painfully obvious when the passing attack is pocket-based, that is not where Justin Fields thrives. When the pocket is on the move, when he is called into movement, that is where Justin Fields can show how special he can be. And he still will have to prove he can execute that at a high level on a consistent basis for the Bears to look at maybe picking up the fifth-year option and considering a long-term investment and everything else. But the Bears' offensive play caller, Luke Getsy, is a big part of that equation as well. And whether it is Fields or Bajent, that is where Getsy has to show more consistency in the way that he calls the game. 312-644-6767. Let's get back out to the phone lines here on the Post Show. Jesse is out in Cali on the left coast. Jesse, what's happening?
Hey, Mr. Heron. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy listening to your spin on things. You're good at what you do.
Thank you, sir.
I'm calling to talk about our roster, and I was wondering what your thoughts are, or if you trust our organization's ability to identify and evaluate good football players. It's hard for me to see anyone on our roster, almost at any position, consistently winning our 1v1 matchups. Mm. You know, when we need to make a play, nobody's making plays. And also, over the last few years of losing, I feel like this organization has developed a dysfunctional reputation. And how is that going to affect our ability to be an attractive spot for free agents? You know, especially with Ryan Poles, he seems to be playing hardball, even with the players that are up for contracts or are coming up, you know, and I'm just wondering how that's going to play out. I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate you taking my call.
I really like these questions you pose here, Jesse. So to the concept of the Bears roster and where it's at right now. So the positions where the Bears have guys who I feel show that they can, like, they can win their one-on-one matchup. I think there are several players in the secondary that I believe have that potential to show like an elite level of play, a high level of play, somebody who you say, all right, that this individual is matched up with the guy across from him, and I think they legitimately have a chance to consistently win that matchup and maybe do so at a high level on a consistent basis. Really like what Kyler Gordon brings to the table in that regard. Certainly still a young football player, but he's got exceptional potential there, and we see him both as a run defender, as a pass defender. Like, there was a stretch of the game where on back-to-back plays, Kyler Gordon comes up, and he's essentially an outside linebacker. The Bears were in sub meaning kind of their nickel and dime personnel, with no Tremaine Edmonds in the lineup today. I thought we would see even more Noah Sewell than we saw. We mainly saw Noah Sewell in some short yardage scenarios, but part of that is because the Bears feel comfortable with the versatility they get from the guy who Matt Eberflus has begun calling Spider-Man, and Kyler Gordon. So there was back-to-back plays where he was essentially an outside linebacker, being the force-contained defender, being the edge setter against the run, came up and smacked the run right in the grill on a first down play. And then a couple of snaps later on a third down play, he's covering Chris Olave. And as far as straight line speed, there's very few receivers in football who can fly like Chris Olave in his second year in the National Football League. And Kyler Gordon, first down, boom, smacking the run in the grill and getting that for no gain. And then a couple of plays later, they need to get off the field on third down. And Kyler Gordon is just running stride for stride up the sideline with Chris Olave on a ball that sails out of bounds. So I really like Kyler Gordon. Really like Jaquan Brisker and what he brings to the table. We've seen so much from Jalen Johnson, and he's a guy who deserves to be paid like one of the better corners in football. You know, like, when I was talking about Roquan, my thought was, if Roquan's going to reset the market as an off-ball linebacker, I didn't have a big issue with that because I did feel like Roquan had just shown that level of performance and productivity there. Personally, I view Jalen as being just a small step behind that, just in what I evaluate as his true snap-by-snap production. And production, I'm not just talking statistical. I just mean just sort of what the caller mentions there. Jesse mentions, like, who's winning their one-on-one matchups on a consistent basis. I would say Jalen, he's not as, I think, as elite of the elite, as 1% of the 1% as I feel like Roquan is, but he plays a more premium position. So that I don't want to go down a rabbit hole on Jalen Johnson, but he's definitely a guy who I view him elite as far as winning one-on-one matchups. So the secondary, I mentioned several players there. Eddie Jackson, it's hard to evaluate where he's at this point in his career, but until his injury last season, Eddie Jackson was performing back at a Pro Bowl level, taking the football away, supporting the run with physicality, and we'll just see where Eddie Jackson is in that regard. If he's still kind of the Eddie Jackson of old that he showed he could be through the first half of last season before he had to leave the rest of the year with an injury. So secondary, I think you're in good shape there. Not a lot of additional moves need to be made, aside from just figuring out a contract with Jalen Johnson. Linebacker, you know, you spent some money at linebacker, really like what TJ Edwards has done here as of late. And I think Tremaine Edmonds is definitely a good football player, an elite-level athlete who's an above-average off-ball linebacker. I don't think he's an elite linebacker in football as far as just splash plays that you would really hope for there. But I like both those guys as linebackers. Defensive line, Montez Sweat. I'm hopeful that he'll become more and more impactful. I thought he had a couple of nice moments in the game today, rushing the quarterback. But as I've been asked about this multiple times here in recent days, whether it was Friday, Bears Unleashed with Gabe Ramirez and Cassie Carlson, whether it's this morning with Luke Kanellis over on Fox 32, you know, Montez Sweat is not, he's not a Julius Peppers level football player. Julius Peppers is probably going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame at some point here. That's not Montez Sweat. Montez Sweat is not Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack may end up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame at some point here. Like, he's, you know, Khalil Mack was the most deadly edge defender in football for several seasons. That's not Montez Sweat. He got a big contract, but the salary cap is going up and the value of the position continues to uptick. And, you know, he had the Bears. I think it was Potsy who mentioned having the Bears over a bit of a barrel. I think all those things end up being true. So I don't have an issue with 4 years and right around $100 million. That's the value for that position for a guy who is amongst the best in the sport. But, you know, I think the production as a pass rusher today wasn't very different than what I expected. You know, if you haven't watched Montez Sweat very closely, you may have been disappointed with what you saw today as a pass rusher. I think he'll flash. He's a big-time athlete. But he's not one of these guys who's just a hellacious edge rusher that just constantly gets to the corner and quickly flips his hips and is around the quarterback consistently. But he's got long levers. He knows how to use them. And he can consistently impact the pocket, whether with power, with speed, with violent hands. He's definitively, he's the best pass rusher the Bears have as soon as he walks in the door. But don't expect him. And I said this to Gabe and Cassie on Friday on Fox 32 on Unleashed. Don't expect Khalil Mack. Like that first season of Khalil Mack here with Chicago, don't expect that as a pass rusher. That's not who Montez Sweat has ever been at this point in his career. But they got a high-level defensive end. They got a guy who is their best pass rusher on the squad. They got somebody who can be a centerpiece around a much better pass rush. But as you look at the game today, Derek Carr didn't spend a whole lot of time under duress. Derek Carr didn't spend much time on the ground, even with the addition of Montez Sweat. But he is a guy who I do think, to Jesse the caller's question, he certainly upgrades the Bears as far as someone who wins their one-on-one matchups. On offense, DJ Moore. There were multiple times where Tevin Jenkins and Darnell Wright next to each other on the offensive line, they can move people. At whatever point Nate Davis is healthy and you get him in at right guard, you flip Tevin Jenkins back over to left guard. It's good to see Braxton Jones back out there at left tackle. Whatever this false start thing is that he's got going right now, man, they have got to get that figured out. But Braxton Jones still has, in my opinion, great potential to be like a legit find for the Bears as a left tackle. He's got to move when the ball gets snapped, or maybe just an eyelash before the ball gets snapped. But just all these infractions on Braxton Jones is a problem. I do like that they had some rotation going with him and Larry Borum. They didn't want to overexpose a guy who had a neck injury and just kind of ease him back in. But Braxton Jones, I still like his potential there as a left tackle. But on the whole, who are your guys who you say, all right, that's somebody we're building around because we know we've got an advantage there for one-on-one? I think there's a lot of those guys in the secondary. There's probably one on the defensive front that they've added, Montez Sweat. On offense, maybe a couple of offensive linemen. Maybe Tevin Jenkins and Darnell Wright at least physically show that potential there. And then in the end, quarterback. Like Justin Fields, your starting quarterback, is the guy who scares defenses when they game plan for him. He certainly scares them with his legs. And then you see where now that there's more film on Tyson Bagent, and there's like the one deep ball where he overthrows DJ Moore. The reason he overthrows DJ Moore is not because he has exceptional arm strength. It's because he has to throw the ball so flat to get it 45 yards in the air down the field that there's no chance for DJ Moore to adjust to it. So that's where, again, the arm strength aspect of it ends up playing a big factor in how Tyson Bagent has to play quarterback. But defenses aren't afraid of Tyson Bagent because, yeah, he can mount a 10-12 play drive for you, but he has to be so pristine, so precise in doing so. And it's difficult for a rookie, it's difficult for any quarterback to be able to do that consistently throughout four quarters of a game in the way that Bagent at this point in his development just has to methodically march the ball down the field, and everything has to go well because he hasn't shown that he can effectively throw it over your head on a consistent basis with accuracy and arm strength. And he certainly hasn't shown that he's going to be able to run away from you and put touchdowns on the board either. So in the end, on defense, there's a number of guys who I'll put in that category that have the potential to develop there, or like a Jalen Johnson and Montez Sweat who are already there. On offense, it's more limited to the question about which guys on this roster can really win those matchups. Ryan Poles playing hardball right now. I get it to a certain extent. Getting Montez Sweat done, that gives them some leverage, some leeway, some versatility in what they can potentially get done with Jalen Johnson moving forward here. And it's an opportunity for the rest of the season for Jalen Johnson to prove that he is potentially worthy of one of those top cornerback contracts in football. And I hope he does. Been calling his games since he was in college. I like his game. I'm not going to compare him with, he's not the best corner in football. He said he's not trying to reset the corner market. So I'm confident. I do believe the Bears and Jalen Johnson will figure something out here. And I hope that his ball production, his statistical production on the football, ticks up even more. We see more interceptions from Jalen Johnson toward, down the stretch of the season here, and he earns, perhaps even a bigger contract. It's a good opportunity for both he and the Bears to really see what that true value ends up being here. Appreciate all of you tuning in for the Post Show after another Bears defeat here, but I try to give you some context on some of these things because there are things to look forward to for the remaining stretch of the Bears football season here, even though they are 2-7. But what will this roster look like moving forward? There's plenty to evaluate there. I evaluate Alex Kuhn as being a high-level producer for this show, and I thank him for that. Sunday Night Football coverage is on the way here, Cincinnati Bengals and the Buffalo Bills. And then, of course, tomorrow is a Football Monday here on The Score. So I hope you tune in for all of that. Tune in all day Monday for reaction to Bears and Saints. Gabe Ramirez will be live overnight from 12 to 5, followed by Mullion Hall, Bernstein and Holmes, and Parkinson Spiegel throughout your work day. So hang out with us on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Busey Bank and itsnotagameillinois.com. All of it can be heard on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. I'm Anthony Herron. This has been the Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I think it was all on me, just forcing a couple of plays there, and then you can't afford to take plays off in NFL because they come back to bite you. So got to be sharp on every play.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I like Tyson Bagent. I do like him a lot, but I'm keeping him in context. I'm just advising the rest of you to do so as well. 312-644-6767. It's a post show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I'm Anthony Herron, taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage here. Got my guy Alex Kuhn on the ones and twos with me as we get you set for Cincinnati and Buffalo. That game will be heard right here on The Score. But up until that point, we got the phone lines hot at 312-644-6767. Let me start off with some calls. I can react to some of the calls and then get in back into some of my other opinions as well. I haven't talked about Montez Sweat and the Bears defense very much. I don't want to make sure I get some of that in as well, but we've had some folks on the lines being very, very patient, some in the city, some in the state, some out of state as well. Let's go to Jim, who is in North Carolina. Go on and raise up, Jim. What's happening?
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I've been a transplant from the Midwest. I've been a Bears fan since 64. And I've watched a bunch of the college games with the North Carolina quarterback and the USC quarterback, and I don't see either one of them as being an improvement over Justin Fields. I'd much rather see us get three or four first-rounders by trading down and building a team around him.
Three or four first-rounders. See, that would be a, that would be an interesting haul. I think I'm not, you know, I don't study these. And thank you very much for the call, Jim. Appreciate you listening from North Carolina. I'm not certain what the haul would be for Justin Fields at this point. You know, the Bears right now, they know they would have his rights for at least one more season. He's, you know, just over halfway through his third year right now with the ball club. They will have him at least have his rights for at least through the fourth season. There will be a decision to make this offseason whether or not they would pick up the fifth-year option on Justin Fields as well. If that happens, then whomever they would trade him to potentially, whether or not they would like to have one more season of his rights or two more seasons of contract control, I would imagine those things factor into it as well. But, you know, three first-round picks and this sort of stuff. You know, I don't know whether or not Justin Fields would bring that sort of a haul. But I do know that, you know, coming into the Minnesota game, we saw back-to-back games of Luke Getsy and frankly, in an offensive scheme that was very similar to what we saw today. What we've seen, I think, in multiple games with Tyson Bagent at quarterback, the Raiders game is one that stands out as well, where misdirection and pocket movement were constant. And I really feel like the Bears offense got away from that in the second half of the game today. And you know, you don't have to have a quarterback who's as mobile as Justin Fields to be able to call the QB into movement. And that was certainly on display in the first half of the game today. They ran zone read a bunch with Tyson Bagent. He was able to move the chains. He was able to keep that veteran Saints defense off balance. And they were able to utilize misdirection and pocket movement with a quarterback who's able to be mobile enough to showcase that and do so effectively. And it led to first downs and touchdowns. I talked through in detail that opening touchdown pass that Bagent on the tight end throwback that he threw to Cole Kmet as Cole Kmet ran across the field there and was able to win a contested ball, a jump ball against Tyrann Mathieu. Loved the play design there. It worked out really well for the Bears in the red zone. Got away from it in the second half. But to me, that offensive game plan, very similar to what I feel like Luke Getsy did against Denver, against Washington, some QB run, some sprint, some boot, some misdirection with playmakers, you know, guys on jet sweeps and faking jet sweeps and bodies all over the place and having a quarterback on the move and seeing the way that Tyson Bagent was able to exploit that with his level of mobility. Just picture what that game plan could have looked like with Justin Fields constantly being called into that level of movement that we saw in the first half of the Bears game tonight or earlier today, and versus what it looked like with Tyson Bagent. And again, like I agree with the caller who's talking now. I don't agree with the word electric. I wouldn't use that to describe Tyson Bagent and what we've seen from him, but I do agree that I'm willing to grade Tyson Bagent on a curve because he's a rookie quarterback, three starts into his NFL career. Where the Bears are at right now, though, when you look at this franchise as a whole and where it needs to be understood, that Justin Fields will go back in. Now, if Tyson Bagent would have just been out here lighting it up game after game and the Bears were winning and things were rolling with him, then I don't think they feel committed enough to Justin Fields at this point where we would presume, I'm not confident they wouldn't have pulled Tyson Bagent if he was lighting it up and the team as a whole was doing great with him at quarterback. That's not the case. I think he has been impressive for an undrafted rookie three starts into his NFL career. I'm willing to say I've been impressed by Tyson Bagent. Team as a whole continues to lose games, and he's turned the ball over a lot. My main concern after seeing those few series that Tyson Bagent got against the Minnesota Vikings was a willingness to be what I would term as careless with the football. And I don't necessarily even think that I wouldn't define the interceptions and the strip sack that we saw today as careless, but we do see a Tyson Bagent that has had a lot of turnovers in his limited action so far. Justin Fields had a bunch of turnovers too. Difference is, Justin Fields was a first-round pick. Justin Fields is a commodity that they have a big decision to make on over the offseason here. And also, Justin Fields has, for understandable reasons, shown a much exponentially higher ceiling than Tyson Bagent has shown up to this point. And the Bears are still in an evaluation phase, not only with the quarterback, but with this roster as a whole. And so when Justin Fields is healthy, whether that's this coming Thursday, which I would still be surprised if that's the case, even though he's out there throwing soft toss, you know, on Friday, and it's nice, the media's out there, they can see that, they can look at it. Dude dislocated his thumb on his throwing hand, popped it back into place, and it's nice to see that his thumb is becoming functional. I will be very surprised if Justin Fields is able to start or even play this coming Thursday night against the Carolina Panthers. Following game, though, further removed from that, I think that's going to make sense. I believe there's, of course, a much better chance he'll be physically capable of it, and I believe it will make more sense for both Justin Fields and the Bears. At that point, you'll be 10 games into the season after you get through Thursday Night Football, which means you will have 7 games remaining. It'll be a vital 7 games for Justin Fields. At that point, hopefully he'll be as healthy as he can be by then, but you'll have a 7-game stretch that remains in the regular season for him to perform potentially at the highest level he's capable of. What I think will be vital, will be important, is for the same style of offense that we saw in the first half today, same style of offense that we saw against Denver and Washington that completely went away against Minnesota. And as great as our media is, I really wish I even said this in transition, coming out of that Vikings game whoever I filled in with on Monday, so you're doing transition with the afternoon show. I was hoping someone in the media, when the opportunity came to specifically address Luke Getsy about the game plan against Minnesota, and Kevin Fishbane, Fishy Business himself, wrote an article in The Athletic about the game plan and the way the pocket moved and how much time was spent for Justin Fields being called into movement against both Denver and Washington, and how that completely went away against Minnesota. And it's the same. It feels repetitive because it's the same thing, the same refrain that I've been repeating for 2 years with Luke Getsy as the offensive play caller here, with Justin Fields as his quarterback and just the personnel on the whole. We saw what that looked like against Denver and Washington, and then it became very pocket-based against Minnesota. Justin Fields didn't handle that well. And Tyson Bagent, even though he is, at this point in his development, he gets the ball out more quickly, more rhythmically than Justin Fields does. He's more decisive than Justin Fields is, with a much lower ceiling in doing that. He's got a quicker release. He's more decisive when he does it. And that's great, because that's who he has to be to have a chance at success as a quarterback. And he knows who he is. I think that's a great thing for Tyson Bagent. The Bears offense, though, for it to put a bunch of touchdowns on the board, like we've seen them put a bunch of touchdowns on the board when Justin Fields has been in at QB. And that, to me, is where Matt Eberflus, with, I would say, his time as Bears coach is on the line right now. As much as that last 7 games is going to mean for Justin Fields, what remains of this season will go a long way in determining whether or not Matt Eberflus gets an opportunity to continue as Bears head coach. I don't know what discussions have been had with Luke Getsy about the offensive game plan up to this point. I'm confident they meet about it on a consistent basis, but whether it is Bagent and comparing the first half of today's offense versus the second half, or if it's when Justin Fields is in there and comparing the games where Justin Fields has looked most comfortable and been at his best versus the games where he has not, it is painfully obvious when the passing attack is pocket-based, that is not where Justin Fields thrives. When the pocket is on the move, when he is called into movement, that is where Justin Fields can show how special he can be. And he still will have to prove he can execute that at a high level on a consistent basis for the Bears to look at maybe picking up the fifth-year option and considering a long-term investment and everything else. But the Bears' offensive play caller, Luke Getsy, is a big part of that equation as well. And whether it is Fields or Bagent, that is where Getsy has to show more consistency in the way that he calls the game. 312-644-6767. Let's get back out to the phone lines here on the Post Show. Jesse is out in Cali on the left coast. Jesse, what's happening?
Hey, Mr. Heron. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy listening to your spin on things. You're good at what you do.
Thank you, sir.
I'm calling to talk about our roster, and I was wondering what your thoughts are, or if you trust our organization's ability to identify and evaluate good football players. It's hard for me to see anyone on our roster, almost at any position, consistently winning our 1v1 matchups. Mm. You know, when we need to make a play, nobody's making plays. And also, over the last few years of losing,
I feel like this organization has developed a dysfunctional reputation. And how is that going to affect our ability to be an attractive spot for free agents? You know, especially with Ryan Poles, he seems to be playing hardball, even with the players that are up for contracts or are coming up, you know, and I'm just wondering how that's going to play out. I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate you taking my call.
I really like these questions you pose here, Jesse. So to the concept of the Bears roster and where it's at right now. So the positions where the Bears have guys who I feel show that they can, like, they can win their one-on-one matchup. I think there are several players in the secondary that I believe have that potential to show like an elite level of play, a high level of play, somebody who you say, all right, that this individual is matched up with the guy across from him, and I think they legitimately have a chance to consistently win that matchup and maybe do so at a high level on a consistent basis. Really like what Kyler Gordon brings to the table in that regard. Certainly still a young football player, but he's got exceptional potential there, and we see him both as a run defender, as a pass defender. Like, there was a stretch of the game where on back-to-back plays, Kyler Gordon comes up, and he's essentially an outside linebacker. The Bears were in sub meaning kind of their nickel and dime personnel, with no Tremaine Edmonds in the lineup today. I thought we would see even more Noah Sewell than we saw. We mainly saw Noah Sewell in some short yardage scenarios, but part of that is because the Bears feel comfortable with the versatility they get from the guy who Matt Eberflus has begun calling Spider-Man, and Kyler Gordon. So there was back-to-back plays where he was essentially an outside linebacker, being the force-contained defender, being the edge setter against the run, came up and smacked the run right in the grill on a first down play. And then a couple of snaps later on a third down play, he's covering Chris Olave. And as far as straight line speed, there's very few receivers in football who can fly like Chris Olave in his second year in the National Football League. And Kyler Gordon, first down, boom, smacking the run in the grill and getting that for no gain. And then a couple of plays later, they need to get off the field on third down. And Kyler Gordon is just running stride for stride up the sideline with Chris Olave on a ball that sails out of bounds. So I really like Kyler Gordon. Really like Jaquan Brisker and what he brings to the table. We've seen so much from Jalen Johnson, and he's a guy who deserves to be paid like one of the better corners in football. You know, like, when I was talking about Roquan, my thought was, if Roquan's going to reset the market as an off-ball linebacker, I didn't have a big issue with that because I did feel like Roquan had just shown that level of performance and productivity there. Personally, I view Jalen as being just a small step behind that, just in what I evaluate as his true snap-by-snap production. And production, I'm not just talking statistical. I just mean just sort of what the caller mentions there. Jesse mentions, like, who's winning their one-on-one matchups on a consistent basis. I would say Jalen, he's not as, I think, as elite of the elite, as 1% of the 1% as I feel like Roquan is, but he plays a more premium position. So that I don't want to go down a rabbit hole on Jalen Johnson, but he's definitely a guy who I view him elite as far as winning one-on-one matchups. So the secondary, I mentioned several players there. Eddie Jackson, it's hard to evaluate where he's at this point in his career, but until his injury last season, Eddie Jackson was performing back at a Pro Bowl level, taking the football away, supporting the run with physicality, and we'll just see where Eddie Jackson is in that regard. If he's still kind of the Eddie Jackson of old that he showed he could be through the first half of last season before he had to leave the rest of the year with an injury. So secondary, I think you're in good shape there. Not a lot of additional moves need to be made, aside from just figuring out a contract with Jalen Johnson. Linebacker, you know, you spent some money at linebacker, really like what TJ Edwards has done here as of late. And I think Tremaine Edmonds is definitely a good football player, an elite-level athlete who's an above-average off-ball linebacker. I don't think he's an elite linebacker in football as far as just splash plays that you would really hope for there. But I like both those guys as linebackers. Defensive line, Montez Sweat, I'm hopeful that he'll become more and more impactful. I thought he had a couple of nice moments in the game today, rushing the quarterback. But as I've been asked about this multiple times here in recent days, whether it was Friday, Bears Unleashed with Gabe Ramirez and Cassie Carlson, whether it's this morning with Luke Kanellis over on Fox 32, you know, Montez Sweat is not, he's not a Julius Peppers level football player. Julius Peppers is probably going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame at some point here. That's not Montez Sweat. Montez Sweat is not Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack may end up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame at some point here. Like, he's, you know, Khalil Mack was the most deadly edge defender in football for several seasons. That's not Montez Sweat. He got a big contract, but the salary cap is going up and the value of the position continues to uptick. And, you know, he had the Bears. I think it was Potsy who mentioned having the Bears over a bit of a barrel. I think all those things end up being true. So I don't have an issue with 4 years and right around $100 million. That's the value for that position for a guy who is amongst the best in the sport. But, you know, I think the production as a pass rusher today wasn't very different than what I expected. You know, if you haven't watched Montez Sweat very closely, you may have been disappointed with what you saw today as a pass rusher. I think he'll flash. He's a big-time athlete. But he's not one of these guys who's just a hellacious edge rusher that just constantly gets to the corner and quickly flips his hips and is around the quarterback consistently. But he's got long levers. He knows how to use them. And he can consistently impact the pocket, whether with power, with speed, with violent hands. He's definitively, he's the best pass rusher the Bears have as soon as he walks in the door. But don't expect him. And I said this to Gabe and Cassie on Friday on Fox 32 on Unleashed. Don't expect Khalil Mack. Like that first season of Khalil Mack here with Chicago, don't expect that as a pass rusher. That's not who Montez Sweat has ever been at this point in his career. But they got a high-level defensive end. They got a guy who is their best pass rusher on the squad. They got somebody who can be a centerpiece around a much better pass rush. But as you look at the game today, Derek Carr didn't spend a whole lot of time under duress. Derek Carr didn't spend much time on the ground, even with the addition of Montez Sweat. But he is a guy who I do think, to Jesse the caller's question, he certainly upgrades the Bears as far as someone who wins their one-on-one matchups. On offense, DJ Moore. There were multiple times where Tevin Jenkins and Darnell Wright next to each other on the offensive line, they can move people. At whatever point Nate Davis is healthy and you get him in at right guard, you flip Tevin Jenkins back over to left guard. It's good to see Braxton Jones back out there at left tackle. Whatever this false start thing is that he's got going right now, man, they have got to get that figured out. But Braxton Jones still has, in my opinion, great potential to be like a legit find for the Bears as a left tackle. He's got to move when the ball gets snapped, or maybe just an eyelash before the ball gets snapped. But just all these infractions on Braxton Jones is a problem. I do like that they had some rotation going with him and Larry Borm. They didn't want to overexpose a guy who had a neck injury and just kind of ease him back in. But Braxton Jones, I still like his potential there as a left tackle. But on the whole, who are your guys who you say, all right, that's somebody we're building around because we know we've got an advantage there for one-on-one? I think there's a lot of those guys in the secondary. There's probably one on the defensive front that they've added, Montez Sweat. On offense, maybe a couple of offensive linemen. Maybe Tevin Jenkins and Darnell Wright at least physically show that potential there. And then in the end, quarterback. Like Justin Fields, your starting quarterback, is the guy who scares defenses when they game plan for him. He certainly scares them with his legs. And then you see where now that there's more film on Tyson Bagent, and there's like the one deep ball where he overthrows DJ Moore. The reason he overthrows DJ Moore is not because he has exceptional arm strength. It's because he has to throw the ball so flat to get it 45 yards in the air down the field that there's no chance for DJ Moore to adjust to it. So that's where, again, the arm strength aspect of it ends up playing a big factor in how Tyson Bagent has to play quarterback. But defenses aren't afraid of Tyson Bagent because, yeah, he can mount a 10-12 play drive for you, but he has to be so pristine, so precise in doing so. And it's difficult for a rookie, it's difficult for any quarterback to be able to do that consistently throughout four quarters of a game in the way that Bagent at this point in his development just has to methodically march the ball down the field and everything has to go well because he hasn't shown that he can effectively throw it over your head on a consistent basis with accuracy and arm strength. And he certainly hasn't shown that he's going to be able to run away from you and put touchdowns on the board either. So in the end, on defense, there's a number of guys who I put in that category that have the potential to develop there, or like a Jalen Johnson and Montez Sweat who are already there. On offense, it's more limited to the question about which guys on this roster can really win those matchups. Ryan Poles playing hardball right now. I get it to a certain extent. Getting Montez Sweat done, that gives them some leverage, some leeway, some versatility in what they can potentially get done with Jalen Johnson moving forward here. And it's an opportunity for the rest of the season for Jalen Johnson to prove that he is potentially worthy of one of those top cornerback contracts in football. And I hope he does. Been calling his games since he was in college. I like his game. I'm not going to compare him with, you know, he's not the best corner in football. He said he's not trying to reset the corner market. So I'm confident. I do believe the Bears and Jalen Johnson will figure something out here. And I hope that his ball production, his statistical production on the football ticks up even more. We see more interceptions from Jalen Johnson toward, you know, down the stretch of the season here. And he earns, you know, perhaps even a bigger contract. It's a good opportunity for both he and the Bears to really see what that true value ends up being here. Appreciate all of you tuning in for the Post-Post Show after another Bears defeat here, but I try to give you some context on some of these things because there are things to look forward to for the remaining stretch of the Bears football season here, even though they are 2-7. But what will this roster look like moving forward? There's plenty to evaluate there. I evaluate Alex Kuhn as being a high-level producer for this show, and I thank him for that. Sunday Night Football coverage is on the way here. Cincinnati Bengals and the Buffalo Bills. And then, of course, tomorrow is a Football Monday here on The Score. So I hope you tune in for all of that. Tune in all day Monday for reaction to Bears and Saints. Gabe Ramirez will be live overnight from 12 to 5, followed by Mullion Hall, Bernstein and Holmes, and Parkinson Spiegel throughout your work day. So hang out with us on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Busey Bank and It'sNotAGameIllinois.com. All of it can be heard on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. I'm Anthony Herron. This has been the Post-Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.